Welcome to another episode of Amplify Your Business. Today, we're going to be talking about the business of sauce with three of the sauciest ladies in Canada. We have Joanne, we have Mary, and we have Marlo, the sauce queens behind La Di Da Sauces. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
So it is such a pleasure to have all of you here today. And so you are partners in this business that you started about 7 years ago. So give me a little bit of the backstory behind what motivated you to start La Di Da Sauces.
Who wants to take one? Because I might say what you said, and I don't know if that's, you know, if it's PG or whatever, but anyways, go ahead.
Mary and I were, we started the company and Marlo came on very soon after that. And what motivated us, I think, really is Mary and I were off on sick leave from our really high stressful jobs. I was in children's services. She was working at a cemetery as a family counselor. And we were talking about food. We're big foodies and entertain a lot. And we were talking about, doing something different. We were both on sick leave. We couldn't go back. And I said to Mary, who is full Italian, I said, if you could do anything, what would you do? And she's like, I've always wanted a sauce company. And I said, oh, imagine that, an Italian who wants a sauce company. So I was like, okay, well, F it, let's do it. And I said the actual word. And she's like, yeah, okay. I said, no, I'm serious. Like, you know, we both love cooking and entertaining. Let's do something different. So we started on this journey and really looking at what was in the marketplace. We went to stores looking at, you know, what ingredients were really like in our food, and it really shocked us. So we really made a stand there and then to be more of a healthy alternative. And then, you know, Marlo came along. That's a whole nother long story, but that, you know, she came along, they were friends from before and she joined us and then she wanted in. And it's just been like, we always say we found our DA. So we had our law, we had our D, and now we found our DA.
It was just like the answer to bring me on.
Yeah. It was the right thing to do. It was the right
that's
thing.
That's really it in we a really nutshell.
Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
That's really it in a nutshell. I mean, we could talk for hours about how we started. But
I think for the most part, I think when we first set out to do this, because obviously I'm Italian, Marlo's married to an Italian, her last name is Italiano. That's not even made up. That's factual. And Joanne's family has got some Italian in her too. And I'm, you know, and so when we really started, we thought, what are we going to do that's different? Because we didn't want to be like everybody else. We didn't want to be claiming that my nonna sauce is better than your nonna sauce, because those are fighting words. Italian, I'll fight. We're not doing that. So when we started coming up with these recipes, and Joe could probably tell you, because I'm not used to cooking by until I own La Di Da, I didn't even have a measuring cup. Like I just would take here, do this. And Marlo cooks the same way, probably a little bit more to recipe than I do, but I never cooked that way. So Joe was like, okay, what are you making there? It smells good. And I'm like, yeah, just some garlic. She's like, well, what is garlic? Like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I don't know, like a clove. And she's like, what is that, a teaspoon? And I'm like, whoa, this is way too much math for me. You know what I mean? So she was the grounding part to me to really understand how I can take a recipe and make it that you can put it in a jar versus just like, you know, make it on a stove and give everybody in the neighborhood a Tupperware of your sauce. And then really, truly, you know, we'll get into all their flavor profiles and stuff like that. But when Marlo came along, it was, you know, it was one of those things where like being an entrepreneur is tough, right? So we thought we knew it all. We have two girls who just started a business. We quit our full-time jobs, six-figure jobs to start a sauce business. People thought we were nuts, right? They're like,
I'll say we started the company with $3,000.
Yeah, we had $1,500 each. We're like, this is it. Make it or break it. Kind of thing, right? Yeah. And then, and then sort of like, you know, in this moment of like really thinking, man, I think we're onto something here. I think we're onto something. And Marlo and I, like, as Joe said, had known each other since our children were little, you know, going to kindergarten together. Right. And we kind of met on the playground, and Marlo's always been the healthy, the bouncy one and everything. I was like, my kids used to go to our house and they go, Marlo made us homemade pancakes. I go, oh, did she? Does Marlo make pancakes? That was one of those, right? So,
and we did arts and crafts too.
And she's like, we did arts and crafts. I go, did you? Here's a book. Like, go sit down. I got stuff to do. Anyways. So then Marlo, found sauce on Facebook because we had just started, you know, kind of like, oh, hey, look at us. We're making sauces, you know, kind of thing. Nothing super big. But So we started doing that. And then Marlo reached out to me and she said, hey, what's going on? Unfortunately, Marlo had lost her husband to cancer that year. Was that year, right, Mar? Yeah, it was that year. Yeah. Because, you know, she lived such a healthy lifestyle and helped Frank, you know, especially through his last final months, really probably stayed on this earth longer than he, you know, he could, he should have because of Marlo. And so she called and she said, he's hey, what's going on? Yeah. She was like, what's going on? I see you were doing this. What's this Lottie done? I have nothing to do. I'll come and help you. We're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Come and help us. Right. So at that point we had the two nonnas in the, I had my aunt and my mom, you know, peeling tomatoes and doing that stuff. Right. Yeah. And then Marlo said, oh, I'll come out and help you for a bit. And she did. And, you know, 86 hours later, Marlo's like, yeah, I really like this. And we're like, oh, great. Keep going. Keep plugging away. Da, da, da. And we went to an event, the women's show that's coming up actually. And Joe and I said, hey, Marlo, do you want to come for the event? You know, we hung out together. We spent the day together. People thought she was an owner. She's like, cause she was so like passionate about what we were doing, you know, and me and Joe are kind of like, the whole time we're like, okay, yeah. I see where she's going with this. And then, you know, we started packing up after, you know, 3 days of a show is like a nightmare for anybody. Yeah. But anyways, Marlo's carrying a 6-foot table on her shoulders. And me and Joanne are like, we're out of breath. I'm like, what's going on? She's not human. And Joe's like, she doesn't eat carbs. Like, you know, so that's always been. And then that next day, Marlo said, you know what? I want something. I want to like really sink my teeth into this. And that's kind of the story of La Dienda.
Really cool. And so this was 7 years ago. And so you started with $3,000, started making the sauces. And then what was the moment where you thought we really do have something here? So what was that moment? Does anyone want to take a shot at that?
I'm just going to say this because I think one of the cool things that we really recognized very quickly is we needed a really interesting point of difference. And the minute we identified that we were a vegan plant-based company back 7 years ago, we was touting all of that, right? So when we figured out we were onto something is when we started using that language and it wasn't all gluten-free, right? Everybody was doing gluten-free, everything. You know, they were looking for interesting gluten-free products and whatnot. We started the platform off. We are a vegan company. We're plant-based. We're gluten-free. We have no added sugar. And by the time we got to the fourth thing, they were like, yes. Yeah. So we went, you know, being in... And everybody was excited about it. All the buyers were like, wow, something different, you know. I think the point of difference is what really our decision to do something different and splash across everything that we're not just for pasta. We're a meal starter kind of thing, a meal in a jar, whatever you want to say about us. I think the point of difference is what really made people stop and go, wait, what? You know what I mean?
Well, continue to. Like, I agree. Like, I'm the sales lead, and every time I talk to any grocer, I actually am happy that we're not just a tomato sauce brand, like, no offense, but like they want to hear what's different. What is your point of difference? That's one of the first questions any grocer will ask you. Well, we have a cauliflower Alfredo keto sauce, huge trend. Like, we do our research. What are the people buying? What do they want? And what is different? Like, you walk down the pasta aisle, sauce, I call it a sea of sauce, red sauce.
Yeah.
So we have a mushroom basil sauce that's gluten-free, thickened up with chickpea flour. That's different. Yeah, like I said, the Alfredo butternut squash beet sauce we developed by listening to the consumers out there at events, many events, were saying, I can't have nightshade-free vegetables. And we're like, what is a nightshade vegetable? Something growing in the dark? And then we did our research, and sure enough, nightshade vegetables cause inflammation in so many individuals. Like, anybody with an autoimmune disorder, which there's hundreds out there, should stay away from nightshades, which are tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and potatoes, all those lovely things. They can actually cause inflammation, especially with people with arthritis. And it was those consumers were telling us, they saw the difference. So it's not something that we just read and it could be hearsay. It was like, they've gone to, you know, a naturopath or holistic nutritionist, which is a real trend right now too with COVID. Everybody wants to get healthy. So that was the next line that we developed, was the soups with immune boosting ingredients. Like, that was the other thing about COVID too, that's made us kind of stay above, keep your head above water with sales, grocers are looking for to support local, and they're looking for clean ingredients, immune boosting, something that that's about, you know, people are looking for. So it's, yeah, the point of difference is 100%. Like when we brought the soups to Loblaws, sorry, I was just gonna say, one of the first things that buyer said was, oh my gosh, I love these soups. Like if I have to see another presentation on a chicken noodle soup, I'm gonna like lose my mind. So yeah, and we've got great relationships with buyers. They just love the product, love us, of course. What's not to love?
I think the key to all of that too, really, Lance, is that what started as what people thought was a fad of oh, everybody jumps on the vegan plant-based thing. And if you've never known anybody vegan or plant-based, you'd say, yeah, it might've been. I have a life with my son is vegan. I've known a girl, my girlfriend's niece, who has been vegan all her life. And I used to, as a young adult, I used to say to myself, what is she eating? Like, you know, because it was just that it was almost an unspoken thing. You didn't talk about it. Most people thought vegans just don't want to hurt animals, but there's so much more to it. Obviously we don't need to get into too much about that. But what la-di-da saw was that this fad was trending, and this trend wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't going, in fact, you know, we're talking billion-dollar industry. It's not going anywhere. Everybody then said, let's jump on, including, as Joe, to Joe's point, including the big things. Like you never saw Catelli. Now Catelli has a plant-based, now Catelli has this, or whomever. I'm not bashing anybody.
A&W bringing on.
Yeah.
No, like the big franchises bringing on vegan products, options.
Yeah. So it's really good because you were at the forefront of that in a lot of respect, right? Yes. And so you were able to ride that wave, which is just, a great opportunity for growth. And so speaking of growth, I know when we were talking about earlier, you're saying that was actually one of the biggest challenges that you've had in terms of the company is growing too fast. So can you speak to me a little bit about that?
So we got distribution and we're all excited, like, oh my God, it's going to be fantastic and grow across Canada. And we're going into all these stores and beautiful. But with that comes a mandate. These stores, you want to be on my shelf, you're either going to pay a fee or you give it for free, or sometimes both. You're going to pay a fee and then give it for free. And I'm like, who's the genius that came up with that? Must have been Italian. But I'm like, oh my God, okay, like, so it happened so fast that, you know, Mary actually sat down and went through all the numbers, and it was like, okay, this is not working. We're not, it's great that we're in, you know, 300, 400 stores, but at the end of the day, there's no money left, no paycheck for us. And so we decided that we're going to pull back, concentrate on being famous in Ontario, which we kind of are now. I'm going to say we've had some real big stores call us and say, you want to present?
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah. So that was very cool. So we're dealing with an Ontario distributor right now that he only carries Ontario made makers products. And he deals with all mom and pop shops across Ontario, which we've grown 100 stores. There's hundreds of stores. He's got about 600 signed up on his platform and about 300 makers. And he does things that no other distributor is doing. And so this is, I think, great advice for any small company looking to grow with not losing their shirt, like, because there's no shelving fees with these small stores.
Yeah.
The small stores, we couldn't get them before because they would be like, well, can I just have four of like each of your items? And like, no, we can't, our cases are in 12. But this distributor breaks up the cases. So if a store just wants to try one of each of our 14 SKUs, they can, and then they can have two of each 14 SKUs next week. Like, and he gives like a promo code, $100 off the first order. His minimums are very low, where the big guys, their minimums are like $700, $800, where those small stores cannot deal with them. Or if they do, they have to wait till half their store is sold out. So those are, that's.
You get caught up in the glory of it. You get caught up in the glory of like, everybody wants you. And to, you know, to when you're, you know, everybody plays a role in this business, right? Like, so I do sales, marketing, and R&D. Marlo's our sales lead for domestic. Joanne does operations and exporting. So we all kind of have our own little places. And then you really come together as partners and you say, whoa, 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 let's really look at this report, because we're so excited about doing everything else. And entrepreneurs get so caught up in that, that all of a sudden you look and you go, wait a second, we're paying them to do this. How is that a business? That's not really a business. There's obviously there's marketing expenses, and there is a cost to do business. Every entrepreneur should be aware of that. There is a cost to do business. If you're thinking you're going to make money in the first year, unless you're Apple or Susie Goodfats, love you, Susie. You know, you're going to have a hard time finding that right spot on the shelves in the marketplace, whatever it is. And so you get caught up in that. You don't realize, to Marlo's point, that like, whoa, wait a second. It's great to say we're all across Canada and we're in every, you know, store that you can possibly think of, but what is the cost of that to us? Because if you're doing it just for solely doing that, unless you're, you know, we've all self-funded this business, unless you're doing that, that's a really hard thing to maintain, because at some point, you know, it'll rip you apart. It'll rip you apart as an entrepreneur. I promise you that. If you're listening to this, you just got to think about that golden carrot that dangles in front of your face so often. One of the dragons, the wealthy barber there, I had a conversation with him years ago when La Di Da first started. And he said to me, be careful with that golden carrot that dangles in front of you, because it's not always the end of the rainbow. You know, you're there's a long way to go before you get to that point where you're like, where you can sit back and delegate to people what they're going to do. As an entrepreneur, you're hustling every single day and night. Like, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, not most people are having dinner right now and we're sitting having a podcast with you, because we understand and appreciate the nature of our business and how important it is. Right.
So, yeah. So speaking of numbers, Joanne, you had said before we hit the record button that's one of the big lessons that you've learned as well. And I imagine that's because you're in the operation seat, is just really understanding those numbers. Can you speak to us a little bit about that too, and what you meant then?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the biggest assets that you can do as an entrepreneur is get somebody in your kind of resource bag to be the accountant and bookkeeper in your life. That, you know, and it was not my strong suit at all. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a bookkeeper. I understand the basics of, you know, but one of the things that really has to be at the forefront and really the foundation of your decision making in a company is, how is this going to affect us? You know, cash flow is very important. Forecasting sure is important, but really understanding the ebbs and flows of your business, of where your pain points are. And we learned that too late. It was a long time before we really paid, because you're putting out fires. We have these orders that have to go out. Oh, we're going to get this logistics to New Brunswick or what, you know, so you're, or Newfoundland, or we're going to, and then you start getting caught up in the day-to-day operations of everybody wanting you, but then you're not really paying attention to the bottom line. And the bottom line is the truth. That's the reality of your business. So, you know,
ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So, you know, when you look at, you know, if you don't have your eye on the financials of your company, then,
or the prize, sorry,
nobody's running your company that way.
Yeah,
you can't run your company that. You have to know every single.
Tell them the story about Pure Gum. I like that. I like when we would talk about that. Tell them that one.
Yeah, we were really fortunate. There's a company called Pure Gum. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so it's out of Ontario, I believe, and they're with Arlene too, and they're you know, a very large company now, multi-million-dollar company.
Natural gum.
Yeah, it's a natural gum product. They have mints. They have these tangerine mints. I digress, but they're delicious. anyway, so we were at a fireside chat with him, with Arlene, at an event. And he said something that, you know, is our kind of golden ticket now is, you know, when you start, he said, what he said basically to us is, I didn't start making money until I hired people to do the things that I wasn't good at.
Yeah.
And that has stayed with us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because he said, you know, you can pretend that you're an accountant or a bookkeeper and understand what you have to do, but you need somebody to guide who knows that inside and out. And so I always say to people, like, we're sauce queens. Like, we sell the SHIT out of our sauce. I don't know what the best tax laws are and those. So you know, relying on people that know what you don't know to do the jobs that you don't know, that's another piece of the financial health of your company.
But it's also a struggle because if you don't have the money to pay those people, like that's what we've been up against from day one, is like, it would be great to have full-time bookkeeper, accountants, and you know, other things in all our areas, and somebody in marketing that really knows how to, like, whatever. It's like, we all, like, the three of us are doing a little bit of everything. Like, it just, because we're not quite there yet.
It's a struggle to try to figure out when is the right time to bring on that extra cost, right?
And that's why paying attention to your cash flow and what your expenses are, and what, where you're having targets and goals of what you need to be hitting every month, is really, to me, an important investment in yourself, of understanding, like, where are your pain points. So if we're here, this is where we're going to lose money, or if we're here, this is where we're going to hit even, and understanding, like, all that sort of thing, and you know, and trying to pivot, because we've had to do a lot of pivoting over the years, you know, pivot to different areas.
Yeah. And speaking of pivoting, and as well as watching the cash flow, COVID was a big challenge for a lot of companies. How did you ladies navigate through COVID?
COVID was crazy for us. COVID was crazy. We struggled at the beginning. We thought that was the end. We thought this is the beginning of the end for us when it first happened, because we were so used to doing shows left, right, and center, being in front of people saying, here, Lance, take this, try it. You love it. We will convince you to eat it if you don't want to. You know, so we were always in everybody's face and demoing and events, and people knowing us because, oh, there's a sauce queen. Yeah, you know, And then all of a sudden, everybody's on a lockdown and we're like, oh, right.
No, but what were they buying? What were they buying at the time? The first quarter, we took a hit because everybody was buying a $2 item. They were panic buying, that, like, fill the pantry with $2 brand. We won't say what. And we were like at in the beginning, one of the last brands on the shelf, which was kind of like, it was good because then now that's all you got to buy, just us. But and we got secondary placements when there was holes in some of the grocery stores that they would, okay, we're going to put you over here in mainstream because we were sold out of everything else. So that there was, it was kind of like this. It was like in the beginning, really scary and holy crap, everybody's panic buying everything else. And then they started buying. And then I want to say the second quarter, that's when the stores started recognizing, let's support small local business. And they still are. They're really, everybody's on it. Every big banner is on supporting local Canadian made products, because Canada is known for quality assurance, a trusted country and what they produce. And so even other countries are reaching out to, they want Canadian brands. So we are in a place that there's a lot of good happening. Like Costco literally did call me and said, he found me in his local small shop in Ottawa, and would you like to present? And we're like, absolutely.
Thank you.
No, I was just going to say, but see what we're doing?
Joanne.
Things were cutting out. Like, I think just to circle back just one quick second with everything that the girls are saying, and obviously, but you know, for us, we had to refocus our mentality of like, okay, guys, this is for real. Like, we always worked from home. We've always been kind of like home workers, if you will. We had a little office, we're together all the time. And then all of a sudden we're not together anymore. And we're not in front of people. So we really had to say to ourselves, okay, if you have $10 in your pocket, nine of it means you can eat for the next week or so, and one is just in case. That's kind of like what we had to do. We had to say, here's our $10. We got to throw it in marketing. We're not throwing it into shows anymore. We had to really amplify. You like the way I plugged that in? We had to do that to be able to say, how are we going to get in front of people without being in front of people? And so we really took to, you know, really understanding what does an ad campaign really, really mean? Because I run marketing, but I was like, yeah, I need $50 for an ad campaign. I don't even know what I was saying. But now, you know, to be behind somebody who says, you know what, I don't need 50, I need 500, but this is what it's going to get you. And understanding that and watching everything come to fruition with ad campaigns and with email marketing and people responding to us, so that when we are at events, people go, oh my God, there's Lottie Dow. Or if we're now, I mean, we just recently went to the Toronto Food and Drink Festival. We were part of a booth with a friend of ours who owns Fresh Wagon, and she had a whole bunch of brands there. And just even there, just even for those few hours that we were there, it felt so good to be back in front of people and
yeah.
and people saying, oh, God, la-di-da, I know you. And it's like, oh, you know, it's kind of, you kind of have that aha moment where you go, okay, it's working. Even though we couldn't be in front of these people, it's working. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, COVID was hard on everybody. Marlo touches on a great point that it was good for us for because people decided to really start looking at their health. I think it was scary for us. I think that's really the ultimate thing for us as a business that we would relate to other small businesses starting out. It's a scary thing when you don't know what is in front of you. None of us knew what was in front of us and what that crap was going to go on for 2 years, you know? And it's like, how do you survive yeah. through that? Some survived and some didn't. And you know what? That's when I know we kind of Thelma and Louise did it with each other and said, we got to keep going. Like we got to keep going. As much as this is crazy, we can't stop now, you know? So.
Yeah. So now one of the things that I love to talk to entrepreneurs about are the challenges that they've had to overcome. And so some of the biggest things that have happened to the business, what were the lessons that can come out of those challenges? So COVID, it was just really perseverance and really doubling down and pivoting to marketing in a different way than the in-person. Anything else that has happened in your 7 years that you can really draw some great lessons that can be shared with our audience?
Well, operationally, yes. We've had a lot of, I mean, Marlo is fantastic at our domestic sales. She has created relationships. We've done amazing with her at the helm as far as like getting the orders in. Like it's just been great. But one of the things that, you know, and this is one of the things that like was really a hard one to swallow was, you know, we pulled the trigger on making a lot of inventory for a hopeful order rather than having the PO in our hand because we wanted to be ready. And so one of the lessons that I learned from that is it's okay. It is okay to go to a customer and say, you know what, we can have that for you in 3 weeks. And confidently, because we know that's the lead time that we need, confidently say to them, we would love to do that. We're going to have that ready for you in 3 weeks and not have to go, we can have that to you for tomorrow.
Yeah. And then right.
And then the PO doesn't come in for 6 weeks. And then we're sitting on thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, because that stressed Marlo out too. Now we're like, okay, well, you've got like 800 cases to sell.
They're sold anyway, by the way. They're sold. Yeah.
But my point is really taking that step back and understanding that cycle of operational flow that really stopped us in our tracks of like, we don't have to have 800 cases sitting here waiting. We can do it to spec, you know what I mean? When they put the money, like when they put the PO in.
Yeah.
Because then you've got the PO that's a actual contract that you can buy, you know, purchase your goods to send them off to somebody because we're not a co-packer. We have a co-packer, right? So
yeah.
That's been one of the biggest, that was one of the hardest challenges, a learning curve that just slapped you, you know, right in the face of like, oh, I'm like, dumbass, why did we do that?
And that goes to kind of like trusting your gut. And, you know, we think, because when I think, again, when you're an entrepreneur, you're like, I am right inside of my gut. I know I'm right. This is the way to do it. And we don't want to disappoint and we don't want people to go, oh, we're going to go to the next person. So you take those chances and then you go, holy crap, what did we do? You know, and then you got to come together. Like you have that moment. You got to get over it. And then you got to go, okay, now how do we fix this? And how do we move forward? But really understanding too, that like, you know, working with the right people, aligning yourself with the right people who understand that you might've made mistakes and don't give up on you. That's another key thing. And that's everybody around you, whether it's a bookkeeper, a co-packer, family members, each other, we just have to, you know, understand that, God, we're just trying our best here, you know? And so aligning yourself as you grow as a business, I think you align yourself with that because, you know, taking your product from a conception to putting it on your stove, to bringing it to your shared kitchen, to then bringing it to a production facility. It's like watching a child go to school, you know, and it's like, oh, they're walking, they're crawling, they're this. And then, you know, you're finally able to watch this child walk and somebody goes, well, now they want to run. So, you know what, watch them run. And you're like, when we first went to our very first co-packer, you know, these girls were like, Mary, you gotta let it go. Cause I'm like, I can't, I gotta be there. I don't think they're gonna make it right. You know, it's a hard thing because it's your baby. And you're like, you gotta trust in that. And so along the way, you meet really good people. And sometimes you meet people that just don't have your best interest at heart. And it's a hard thing because you wanna, you know, you wanna have faith in people, you know, and you want people to have faith in you. And then sometimes it works out for you and sometimes it doesn't. And that's just, again, another, just another big roller coaster of being an entrepreneur kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a roller coaster for sure. And one of the things that I think has put a lot of people on that roller coaster this over the last couple of years of COVID has been supply chain management. Have you experienced any issues there and how did you overcome it? If you did?
If I could just say like last, so we landed Loblaws for our soups and they said, you're going to go live on the shelves August, we'll say the third week of August. And then our co-packer sends us a message. We might not be able to have your jars in time for that PO until October. So we are like, I literally was shaking. I'm like, oh my God, like they're making space on the shelves. And what sold out? That could be a strategy. As soon as you get in there, we're sold out for 3 months. But our broker, bless her heart, it's funny, like it's like kind of what you say, it's sometimes it's who you know. Like our co-packer looked everywhere, he couldn't find anybody at the time, and then our broker knew somebody that happened to be in the glass industry in the past, and he knew somebody and he called somebody and got us glass jars too. Yeah, that was just like a saving grace moment, like oh my God. On per, and actually I remember talking to Mary and she's like, oh yeah, you think she's going to get something on a prayer and a wing and a prayer. Remember? You're like, there's no way if Gabe can't find it, there's no way she's going to find it. And just because she knew somebody that knew somebody, like it was just like that. Like you never know. You got to try. Like yeah. it was either we were not going to have glass jars or production for 3 months or find it. So that was a challenge and it still could be a challenge. Like there's, you hear it, supply chain issues all the time. Like to this day, you can see the empty shelves in the stores.
Yeah.
So we had today we were at our co-packers, Lance, Joe and I, we were doing some stuff there and our co-packer was just shaking his head, reading an email that somebody said to him, how are you even getting tomatoes? And we're like, pardon me? Like that's, we don't want to hear that. But like, these are, scary. There's layers to it, right? There's the retail level. So it starts at the retail level. They're like, get me my stuff or you're not in the shelves. And then it comes down, it's like, who's the maker, who's the, and it goes all the way down to the guy who is literally picking the tomatoes in Italy and trying to put them in a bin for you to go on a ship to get on a all the way, right?
Yeah.
So such a chain reaction of everything. That's I never understood supply chain until you really are diving into an entrepreneurial business, a CPG especially, of like, okay, well, I, you know, whatever it is, I can't get my olive oil, which means I can't do this, or I can't get my chickpea flour. And it's just a crazy, crazy thing that happens. And that co-packer that you're working with is probably 100 times more stressed than you are because he's got to make that for you so you can sell it, so that Loblaws can sell it, so that the consumer can eat it, so that they can buy it again. You know, it's this crazy pattern of that, right? Yeah.
And with COVID came the increase, right? The increase of ingredients, increase of jars, increase of importing anything on a container. The containers are astronomical and then they're backed up. Like it's just.
Yeah. So how did you manage that then on the sales side of things then, Marlo? Because from a pricing standpoint, you're pricing these forward contracts, right? With into these stores. And now you're seeing the squeeze happening from your margin or on your margin from all of the cost increases for ingredients and shipping and everything else.
Correct. And so far we have not, our strategy right now, like we did get hit with an increase of ingredients and so on. And we haven't brought it down to the retail level because we're fearful, to be honest, because it's in this day and age, people are like, even right now, this is kind of almost like another COVID going on with this war in Russia. Like, so I've talked to many stores this week, things have really slowed down and they're saying they're very unsettled, you know, the cost of fuel and people are not coming out. The stores are slow. So is everybody like now going through another different phase of worry and panic because what is going on? Do we need to really hold on to every dollar that we have? Do we have to watch our spending? So that part, our strategy right now is not increase our sales. So hopefully everybody else will, and then we'll be more, you know, we were always a premium brand, gourmet brand. That's the name of the company, gourmet. But at the same time, it's, you know, not unreasonably priced, but so yeah. That's how we've dealt with it so far. Like, and hopefully those prices will eventually come down. The ingredients on our end, because we've taken the hit, but we haven't put that down to our customer.
Yeah. And that's difficult, right? Because the shelf space to get the buyer to reach for yours over another one, there is only so much of a premium you can take even in the gourmet space, right? And so knowing when to do the increase and when not to and eat some of those costs, it's really, really delicate.
Yes. But we, like, now we're our focus for this year, the rest of the year, now that the events have opened up, I think I've booked already 4 or 5 events that we're going to be really hightailing it and getting that branding out there, have them taste it, know us, love us, and be then go into, I know those girls. Like, that's huge, because like before COVID, we were doing events at the Terra Greenhouse in Hamilton, Waterdown, Milton. And there was a couple that came, older couple in their 80s. And they're like, oh my God, La-di-da, you're here? I have a scrapbook of you girls at home from when you started, an article in the paper. And it was a whole winter thing. She came back the following week to get her autograph. We were like, oh my God, this is amazing. It was so, hey ladies, like it was just like hugging. And it was just like, because hugging was allowed back then before COVID. But it was adorable. Like, she literally had recipes, like this photo album of a scrapbook of the La-di-da sauce queen. So that was just,
that's what Destiny's Child was like. Who's going to be Beyonce today? Yeah. No, it's those stories just crack me up.
Yeah. So what's, what do you think is going to fuel the success for the next, say year, 2 years, 5 years? What's really has to happen to fuel that in your minds?
Is everyone the Lotto Max together? The Lotto Max together. I want to say one thing before we answer that question, and then Joe, I'll let you take that one. I just want to say one thing, just to tail off that whole COVID thing. When a lot of companies were struggling during COVID, and a lot of them did, and I'm not saying we didn't struggle, we struggled. Trust me, we did, because it's a tit for tat for a lot of things, but. I think, you know, what we did towards the end of September, like September, our last quarter, La-di-da, you know, we put on shelves 10 new SKUs. People thought we were nuts when we said we're going to launch 10 new SKUs by the end of the year. And people thought we were nuts. And we're like, no, we have to, because we have to dip our feet into the soup section and into this jam and jelly charcuterie line section to see if this is where our business is going to go. And again, I'll let Joe finish on that. But we really said, you know what? Let's do it. Again, we took each other's hands and we said, let's do it. Let's try it out. Let's see what happens. It's been wonderful for us. Wonderful, because people, you know, people like anything else, people will get tired. I don't say bored, but people will tire of something because it just becomes like, well, there's tide. I got to do laundry. You know, we didn't want to become that. We wanted to stay fresh. We wanted to give people another aisle to find us. We wanted to give people another reason to buy us. Nice. So when we did all that and we said 10 SKUs, we all looked at each other and said, are we nuts doing this? And we're like, shit, no, let's do it. And we did. And we put every dollar that, you know, we could possibly put into this to run that. And I think that set the pace for like where our business is going to go in the next 2 year projection that we have. And I'll let Joe take that one.
Oh yeah, no, what you said is great, but I think what's fueling it is, you know, we are going to expand markets. We are going to be looking at international markets as well. And the US, we're launching on some different platforms. But I think the growth of the whole company is like a combination of like strategic moves of more SKUs, more stores, more marketing, promos, more events. Like, we're really going to be in everybody's face a lot more. So I think, you know, that's really our whole vision in the beginning was we wanted to be a trusted brand and, you know, be a household name. And I think we're getting there, you know, one jar at a time. It's one of those things where you just look forward and you say, okay, this is the way that you have to survive. You have to evolve. And I will say, you know, 2 years ago, we were very proud to receive the Innovation Award from Sobeys for our cauliflower Alfredo keto sauce. you know, that was very telling. I think, was it 2 years ago or
it was just the beginning of COVID. Yeah.
2020.
Oh my God. Yeah. Look at her. And here comes Miss America. Look at her, Miss America.
So, you know, if you want to have one of the largest retail, well, almost the largest retailer in Canada come to you and say, you know, out of all the stores, they picked you to be the innovative, you know, company and CPG brand, that tells you you're on track and you're starting to get recognized as being like a solid and trusted brand. And that's really important to us. You know, we take every single jar that goes out is our standard, our name, our, you know, our thoughts, our innovations, you know, so we take it very seriously. If someone doesn't like it, or if there's an issue or if there's problems, we pivot, we change, we do, you know, whatever. But I think we're really good at, and this is, I think, you know, testament to Mary too, as well, but she, you know, came up with these amazing recipes. And what large brand can come up with 10 SKUs and launch them in 1 year? That takes three kick-ass entrepreneurs, sales and marketing, you know, operations, us really kind of packing it all together as this package to put out into the marketplace. And that does not happen very often. You don't see large, you know, brands doing that at all. So, you know, I think that's a really exciting piece of being an entrepreneur in Canada, is that there's programs, there's people, there's things that can help you do those things. And we bit off a lot and we got it done.
Yeah. It's a lot of risk taking. And I mean, that's the thing. If you don't roll the dice, sometimes you're never going to get those wins. And so, but it's scary, right? It's scary at times, but obviously
I was just going to say, like when Joe said household name, like we're finally at that, not a household name, but definitely I call a lot of stores, like stores that I, you know, in my research that are new to me, and they're like, oh, I know you. I know La-Di-Da. I'm like, you do? Like, it's such a great feeling. Oh. And then we actually had, you know, the owner of, you know, the salad dressing, Renee's.
Yeah.
Renee's salad dressing. He reached out to us on LinkedIn saying, wow, what a great job you ladies are doing, which was like, that was like, wow. He made it. Looks like we made it. So I had a call. He called me a couple of Sundays ago just to have like a mentor call, and told me how he started out. His wife Renee started out in the garage, and he goes, I started out just like you guys with basically right from the very beginning. And so it's a great story. He got bought out by Heinz. And so he gave me some numbers of his family, his son and daughters that are still in business that I can reach out to. And so I just want to say that to your viewers, don't be afraid to ask for help. Call a company. Some companies never return the call, but you know, I'm a mentor, not that I'm a mentor in a way that I want, like, because we've done these mistakes. We've been there, done that. Like, I have some new people that are just starting out, very appreciative, want to pay me. I'm like, absolutely not. That's not good karma. I want to give you advice of what we've done wrong or what you could do right, et cetera. So if you can succeed a little bit sooner than where we are now, you may be able to get there in half the time because you're not going to do the things that we did.
Yeah. And that's the essence of this show, is exactly that. That's the purpose, is to try to help entrepreneurs navigate through the journey. And the thing about it is the lessons that other entrepreneurs have gone through will really help fuel our growth as an entrepreneurial community. There's just no two ways about it. It really, truly, we all go through a very similar, even though we have different businesses, it's the same kind of challenges. It's the same kind of mistakes that we often make. And so if we can save somebody just a little bit of time, a little bit of money, we're going to see much more success in our community.
Taking a chance is really important too, right? Like I think I can speak for Marlo and for Joe. Every day our inboxes are inundated with like, let me help you with your marketing. Let me help you with this. Take a picture of this. Let me do your finance and let me do you this. It's every day, right? So when I got the message from Matt and you know, it was kind of like LinkedIn and then it kind of rolled over to thing. And I was like, sometimes it's just, you just get a feel for somebody. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, I will take 5 minutes to talk to you. Like, you're going to take your 5 minutes to talk to me, because you can't think, oh, my time's so much more important than yours. Cause though everybody who's making that effort, whether it's on the phone, through LinkedIn, through email or whatever, hustling for their business, it, you know, and then sometimes you just, the synergy is just like Matt and I just clicked so well together. Like we had known each other forever. And he's like, you need to talk to Lance. And I'm like, all right, bring me in. You know, and then when I was on with Lance, I'm like, you need to talk to Joanne and you need to talk to Marlo. And then all of a sudden, you know, here's the story of the lovely family. We got the Brady Bunch thing going on here, right? So to me, it's like, I think that's a really key thing for a lot of entrepreneurs. Don't be afraid to ask, as Marlo said, for help, but don't always negate that an email that comes in might be something just junk, because there could be a lot of validity to somebody reaching out to you saying, you know what, I've been watching you. And I kind of feel like that's really where your business gets to a point where when you start talking to people, like, for example, we had a platform yesterday that reached out to us and, you know, Marlo had reached out to them a little while ago. And I think we've done some poking and prodding, but now they've come back to us and they said, we have two retailers that want you on this platform. And it's like, whoa, you know, and it's like, oh, all those little things that we did of maybe ignoring that email or replying and not getting an email back or whatever it is, it all ties in, right? It's one big circle. I think as an entrepreneur is understanding that there's a place for everybody to help each other in one way, shape, or form, and helping somebody not make the mistakes, as Mar said, and saying, you know what, I'm going to save you that heartache. You know, like we do a couple of mentoring with different people. And, you know, one of the girls that I mentor, she's like, I'm going to go work with this company. I'm like, you know, and I'm like, as your friend, I'm going to tell you, no, you know, you're going to get hammered with it. But as you're, you know, as somebody in the industry, I see why you want to take the chance, but you know what? It's just about slowing down as an entrepreneur and listening and saying, you know what, maybe somebody does know something I don't. Cause I think when you're an entrepreneur and you're in a business, you think, you know it all, right? You're like, oh yeah, I got this and I got that. And it's like, yeah, I really don't, you know? So it's
exciting. I think it's the opposite. And most entrepreneurs that I talk to, they have, you know, they're struck with imposter syndrome all the time where they just feel like, man, you know, do people expect me to do what I'm doing, or am I really actually as good as what I think I am, or have the tools to be able to do what I can do? The imposter syndrome is something that's really difficult. So, So now, speaking of that, the mentorship and just the willingness to speak to people, how do people connect with the three of you then? Is there, you know, is it social media? Is it through the website? What's the best way to get in contact?
I think for the most part, anybody who's reached out to us has either been, we belong to a lot of women groups as well too. There's a big outreach now with founders helping founders, and LinkedIn, I promise you, if I had to give a piece of advice, LinkedIn's a great platform for a young entrepreneurial business. Really, really good. And once you get on there and you start lining yourself up with really good people talking, you become part of a community over there. And we just recently, you know, became the La-Di-Da just recently joined in with a group called Founders Helping Founders, created by Susie York from Susie Goodfats, and said, you know what, let's spread our knowledge. What you know up here and you know here and you know here might be able to help each other. And I think, you know, anytime you're looking for anybody, and you know, social media is probably one of the best platforms to get a hold of us through, you know, our website, and we're very transparent about who we are. We have our business pages and we have our own personal pages, because I think it's great that everybody sees how handsome my new grandson is.
if I could mention about LinkedIn too, that I use LinkedIn a lot to find buyers of retailers. Like my job is always researching new retail. Like that's how I found Loblaws. I connected with a bunch of buyers on there, and eventually one of them called me. I'm like, what? Hello, Loblaws. there's a lot of grocery managers on there. There's buyers of every. So that's a great advice, I think, to new entrepreneurs or even not just new business. Like I'm 7 years in and I'm still researching buyers on LinkedIn, because they're there and you can message them. Sometimes they don't accept. They don't accept my offer, but you know, my connection, but you know, sometimes they do. And they'll say like,
Marlo, you stalk them. So good. I said, but you stalk them.
I do well, a little, you know, I get their cell number, their email, and then there's an email, there's a call, and there's a message.
Their address. Yeah. Drive by their house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, but that's the thing. I mean, you're not going to, have, you know, 100% of the calls you don't make are not going to be received. Right.
So you're right.
Have to do that.
You have to be tenacious.
Yeah.
And the other thing I could advise that I just got onto with our broker a year ago is having a customer relations management program. I use HubSpot. And it's good in whatever area that you are, whether you're marketing, just running a company, because it keeps your, like all of us used to work out of notebooks and, you know, you have six of these filled out.
Yeah.
And I still use a notebook, but I always in HubSpot, like every this. Phone, every phone call I make, I'm on that store's name. And I write down everything that I'm talking about. And then there's a task that you can have a reminder of when to follow up. That store said, not now, call me back in a month, tomorrow, next week, whatever the case, it keeps you. And then when that task, you put the date, you get an email. So like, you know, I'll wake up in the morning, I have 9 follow-ups. Like, cause I can't keep, I have 580 stores on that HubSpot right now.
Yeah.
I can't keep all that up here or in the notebook.
No.
So I mean, I could say,
you're good, but you're not that good.
Yeah, no, I used to have my own system. I had an Excel, and then I would use my phone, put the reminder in the calendar.
Yeah.
But it gets to be a lot. So that, you know, you can have more, like I said, your conversation in there, like the person had back surgery or their daughter got married. Like you want to be really, I'm very personable with all the buyers that I talk to. And it's authentic. I swear we're all authentic. Like you have to be, like if we go into a meeting, we had a broker that says, okay, who's going to say what? And like, no, we're not scripted. We are going to go in there and just, it's, you know, fly off the seat of our pants, how it goes. Like talk about it.
He didn't turns, say whatnot. A word. And he didn't even say a word. And they accepted us. And he was like, what? And we're like, yeah, just let happened? Us run with her. You know, let us cut each other off and we'll get our point across. You know what I mean?
That's really funny.
And you have to be that in sales. Like you have to be natural, authentic, believe in your product, be passionate about it. And then just these buyers are people, they're humans. Like it's not like they're, I mean, some think they're, you know, way up there and they have power and make you feel like intimidated. I don't let that bother me ever. Like I am who I am. I sell the company. I think we've got great products. They're clean and it's what everybody wants. So if you're smart, you're going to bring us on to your shelves because that's what the consumer is looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. The confidence, right, is really important when it comes to the sales. So
yeah. And beat yourself up, Lance. I think that's a hard thing for entrepreneurs is the beating yourself up. When a retailer says no, like, again, we have some similar friends in the group that we, you know, and, you know, you feel it in their voice. They're like, oh, I got turned down by 3 people and this person won't call me back. I just, you know, you want to wave the white flag sometimes because you're like,
yes.
Could I have a day of like nobody listening to me? And then, you know, 12 hours later, you're in 5 different stores because you talked to the right person or you caught the person on the right day or whatever. So I think it's really like, it's such a fine line as an entrepreneur to lose a little bit of faith in yourself when people are saying no, but you have to believe in yourself, as Mar said, and really say, you know what? What am I doing this for? What, you know, who is my target market? What am I doing this for? Who's going to buy me again? Like there's so many avenues to, you know, getting to the right person at the right time, but believing in yourself that it's okay to go to bed and cry. We've done that where it's been like, you know what? And then the next day something so good happens or you hear Singapore. Today, Joe and I are driving and somebody in Singapore, a company in Singapore is interested in our products. And it's like, Okay, we're making some progress.
Are you guys still not to mention that to me? What's going on? Well,
keeping it secret from you, Marla.
Okay. That's how it is. Okay.
Well,
this podcast is an intervention.
we could go on and on. I mean, the advice, the experiences that you ladies have had in these 7 years is just, you know, such a vast knowledge base that you have now. And I love the fact that you're willing to mentor and help people out and answer their questions. But on that note, we're going to have to wrap her up here today. And I want to say thank you very sincerely to each of you for coming on the show, sharing what you've shared. I imagine it's going to help a lot of different entrepreneurs, especially those who are in the consumer packaged goods segment, but all entrepreneurs are going to learn a lot from what you just shared with us. So thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
Thank you for having us.
Matt, and for making the intro to us. And anybody who wants us, you can find us at www.ladidasauces.com.
Excellent. Yeah.
And so locate us on LinkedIn too.
And
yes, LinkedIn.
And then we got LinkedIn. We have the website, probably some other social media too, Instagram and all the rest of them, right? Facebook. Yep. Okay, awesome. Well, that's a wrap. And so thank you everybody for tuning in to another episode of Amplify Your Business. If you're interested in checking out some of our past episodes, head over to amplifyyourbusiness.ca. That's where you'll find our archive. And if you happen to be an entrepreneur who has a great story that you want to share, fill out the application form there and you could be on a future episode of Amplify Your Business. So thank you once again, ladies. And I hope everybody has a prosperous day.